Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every Monday, the wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock. Sometimes he's able to becalm us. Sometimes he's absolutely able to fire us up. Crash, it's a public holiday in Queensland. Happy holidays. Welcome.
Yeah, some of us have got to work, Jared. I've been to Broncos training already, and it was nice to listen to Tracy Neville because it reminds me of my all-time favourite English soccer story. So there you go.
Go on.
Well, it's just Tracy, of course, is the sister of Phil and Gary Neville, the two iconic Man U players. But more than that, she's the daughter of Neville Neville. That's her dad's name, Neville Neville. And, of course, it was just too much for the Manchester United supporters on the terraces who seized on David Bowie's track, Rebel Rebel, to have the chant, Neville Neville, they're in defence. Neville Neville, their talent's immense. Neville Neville, they ain't half bad. Neville Neville, the name of their dad. A mate told me that, and I've been, every time I hear Tracy, I start singing it. I've been singing it for about an hour. Goodness me. What's wrong with me?
You've brightened my day already, Crash. Last night, 30,285 at the Gabba for the Q Clash. So this looks like the absolute sweet spot to make this game a showpiece in your state.
Absolutely, because it has its own little, you could feel it around Brisbane yesterday, a very unusual vibe, a sleepy sort of Sunday that suddenly stirred to life at about 5 o'clock and all roads were heading to the Gabba. It should be a fixture given the Labor Day Monday and you could feel it. It was a modest game, wasn't it? I kept watching it and waiting for a bit of snap and crackle, some tragic injuries, of course. But that should be anchored in because there's so many things that are changing in the draw. It's nice to have those ones that are just you can lock it in and you can go to it and it's great.
Yeah, it was nice to have Sunday night footy on the telly, which I suspect it didn't rate its head off as everyone had their fill. But for it to resonate in your town for those teams, it feels to me like because the Suns have never been a good team yet, that it really hasn't had a chance to grow much beyond isolated incidents here or there and, you know, the odd dobbing last year that took place and we thought that might have provided an edge and it did no such thing yesterday. But to give it that slot, to foster it and to grow it and to trust that you might get full houses the night before a public holiday, it just, for the first time, it just felt like it had found its place.
Yeah, it did, and they're an interesting study, the Lions now. I'm still not sure what they've got. Chris Fagan, to me, you know, he went through so much with the Hawthorn racism scandal. I don't believe, if you're a caring sort of guy, which he is, and sensitive guy, which he is, I don't think you get over that, you know, quickly. And so he's got some chugging to do to get through this year and to get this team into shape. And everyone said, oh, they won easily last night. Yes, indeed. But, that was an interesting one. I had an interesting comment about them the other day, Jared, and, of course, they were terrific last night, let's just say that. But when they've been losing games, an old Lion said to me that they got the former rugby league coach Wayne Bennett many, many years ago to say, what's his barometer when he looks into a team, sees how they're thinking? And he said, there's one thing that has never lied to me in 30 years of coaching. And he said, I'll tell you what it is, and it transcends all the sports. He said, when you're attacking and you lose the ball and you suddenly go into defence, he said, that's during that 10 seconds will tell you what sort of team you've got.
Yep.
how they go, bang, go, quick boys, pivot, go. You know, that's when you know their attitude. And that's one area where the Lions, according to several better, far better judges than me, have been lacking. So maybe it's a turning point. They can still make up ground. But, yeah, it was good to see a great crowd.
I know that you would have enjoyed the story of Logan Morris. Is for all that we have professionalism in sport, there's still the odd throwback. And this is how Chris Fagan depicted a most unexpected debut.
And Logan Morris, which is one of the great stories of the day. He played in the reserves today. He did 13 Ks. He ran 9 Ks in the seniors, so he's covered 22 kilometres. He kicked 1-3 and probably should have kicked 3-1. Fortunately, his parents were here, which is great. They'd come up here to watch the reserves game, so they got to see him make his debut, the debut they didn't know that he was going to have. And I think on the way he ate some Maccas and also had some of Doc's soup before the game. So
and he wore Will Ashcroft's boots.
And Will Ashcroft's boots because
size too small.
Where were his boots?
He didn't think he was playing.
Oh, he didn't think he was playing. So yeah, they were a couple of sizes too small. So there you go. That's his first game. He'll never forget that. Mm.
Don't you just love that, Crash?
Oh, it was beautiful, wasn't it? I mean, they're the sort of stories. I mean, Jared, that's why you're a sports journalist and I. It's those sort of stories that, you know, send a bit of a shiver up your spine because it's old-fashioned stuff. It's like bush footy.
Yeah.
And you know who loved it was Dane Zorko, who we heard there sitting beside Fagan. And I watched that interview and Zorko was smiling and nodding his way through it. And I wonder just for a minute whether Dane got floated back to his own years when he was, you know, toiling anonymously year after year on the Gold Coast and couldn't get a break and suddenly became something. So he would love to see a young kid like that. And you have to say this too. The Lions haven't blooded many youngsters over the last few years because they haven't had to. They've gone through with pretty much the same team. So that story was the talk of Brisbane last night. Great to see.
Great to see. Now, the Storm were in your part of the world as well. They snuck over the line against Gold Coast on what ended up being sort of a quite eventful night.
Yeah, 7 wins. They're, you know what they are? They're the sneaky underachievers. Sorry, quiet achievers yet again. Like, I think it's 1 loss and 7 wins. They were just going to lose that game to the Gold Coast, who were so motivated at home and have put together 4 good games in a row. But they won. And I think out of their 7 games, Jared, the Storm, their plus 4 and against is just 56. So it's about an 8 points. That's what they're averaging their wins by. So they are sneaking home. But, gee, it's a skill. It's a skill. You can't say they're lucky because they just do it every year. And for Cameron Munster to celebrate his 200th game like that was quite nice. He was celebrated onto the ground. And got a really nice reception because, of course, he's a Queenslander and a Rockhampton boy. And a great story too, you know, when he was... when you see him walk, you don't think he's anyone's idea of the modern athlete, but yep, that's sort of his charm. I will say this about him. I've spoken to a few opponents of his over the years, and they all say the same thing. Mate, he is as strong as an ox. When you've got him in a tackle, you feel these arms and legs going, and they said he doesn't look it, but he's incredibly strong.
And Ryan Papenhuyzen, everyone's holding their breath a little bit to find out exactly how bad this injury is.
Yeah, chip bone and in his leg, but he I don't think from first reports that it's anything too major, but it could be a few more weeks in the sideline at a time when he was just sort of gaining momentum, so... He's had a really, really rough patch, Ryan, but I don't think this was, you know, some of his other injuries have been season-ending and no one's had a more brutal 24 months, but this won't be as serious.
I did mean to text you last week amongst all the cricket stuff. Is Wayne Bennett emerged again as the Rabbitohs target to get back there and start coaching again at the ripe young age of 74?
It's incredible. It made me write a column yesterday because you can't compare him to anyone in his sport because he's in longevity, everything. He's left him so far behind. So I thought, let's go to show business. And who's still going at age 74? Well, guess what? Billy Joel is still going. And only last week in Madison Square Garden, he sung Uptown Girl to Christy Brinkley, whose former wife, who he wrote it about because she was from the right side of town, she was in the audience and got up and danced. So there's one 74-year-old with vitality. Bruce Springsteen gave a 3.5-hour concert in Cardiff last night at age 74, the same age as Wayne Bennett. But the one, I wish I'd have thought of it, yeah, Lionel Richie's also 74. And I should have started my story, hello, is it me you're looking for? So you can do it at 74. But, yeah, he's been courted by South, mainly because he's the guy who can control Latrell Mitchell, the enigmatic, headstrong star who's different, extremely talented, outrageously talented, but a very singular sort of guy. And Bennett, I don't know how he does it, Jared, but he's got this ability to let Mitchell sort of run off the leash a little bit and somehow not offend the other players. It comes down to winning. If you're winning, they'll cop anything, and they were winning. Bennett's last game for him was a grand final, a narrow loss to Penrith. Then he joined the Dolphins. But he's still got magic, Bennett. It's incredible his ability to connect with 22-year-old players who are 52 years younger than him. How does he do it? He's sort of like their grandfather. He's a grandfather to some and a father to others, you know. It's amazing.
Just thinking, so Jack Nicholson's 87. I was going to say still going strong. I'm not quite sure whether he is or not. But if Jack Nicholson can light the way, then maybe he's still got two or three coaching gigs left in him. Crash, I know the cricketers are in your part of the woods, or those who aren't in India. So let's have a little chat about World Cup selection, how that's landed, the preparations, and the questions that are about to be posed in the next hour. We'll do that with Robert Craddock. Tap his wisdom and experience. Robert Craddock is with me. The cricketers are due your way, Crash.
They are indeed. In fact, in 45 minutes' time, I'm heading out to an Andrew McDonald press conference at Border Field where the sun's out and players are in town, you know, getting ready for the World Cup. So that'll be interesting. I'd imagine he'll get questions about Jake Fraser-McGurk missing the World Cup team and Glenn Maxwell having a horrendous run in the IPL. I think he's got one score over five in about 7 or 8 knocks. So that'll be an interesting one as well.
How did you think George Bailey went with the unenviable task of trying to talk the whole nation down? We wound ourselves into a state of giddy excitement over Jake Fraser-McGurk.
Yeah, I felt that. Do you know, Jared, isn't life funny? Like, I didn't agree with it, like you, and you were probably slightly more passionate than me. But for some reason, and I can't believe I'm saying it, there's 20% of me that admires the selectors for backing their gut feeling on it. You know, I'd have gone the other way, 100%. I think we need a good young cricketer. He's a player of the future. We've got an old team. What a time to blood him. But for some reason, I've always admired selection panels who just go their own sweet way. Now, they've got to win this. Anything less than a victory and the McGurk shadow will hang very heavily over them. It really, really will. But, you know, see, some people are saying, oh, look, the IPL is an artificial tournament where you've got a super sub coming on as a batting, and most teams have basically got 9 batsmen so they can slog, and so you can just go out with impunity. It's not like a World Cup, a tournament play. That may be the case, but I don't know. Some of the greatest selections in Australian cricket history have been young kids, a 19-year-old Doug Walters, a Shane Warne before he was quite ready, you know? And so he'll either get there or he won't. But the thing about Fraser-McGurk is that he has the potential to change the landscape of Australian cricket, in that I think a lot of young kids will see that and say, that's the guy I want to be, you know? And I love when a sport gets a little bit of a rock star. I've come back from Broncos training, all right?
Yep.
I reckon there was 120 people there and watching it, and about 110 of them would have been women or young girls, and the reason they were there was two simple words: Reece Walsh, the Broncos superstar, who's he's Justin Bieber of Brisbane, you know. And I love that sort of, having that sort of draw card. It's terrific. And Fraser-McGurk, I'm not saying, you know, he is that sort of player, but he could become that sort of player. So it's disappointing, but let's just wait and see.
Yeah, I think their logic is sound. It's just that I don't agree with it. That's all. There's an interesting moment later this week. So Dave Warner should be passed fit to play for Delhi, and his replacement has been Fraser-McGurk. So this is the Australian conundrum all over again. Ricky Ponting gets the first bite at that. I think it's Wednesday morning, but there's definitely a sequence of games that Warner is thought to be available for, and Fraser McGurk has been doing his thing. So I'll be so interested to see what Ponting does with Dele.
Well, especially since Fraser McGurk, you want him to open so that because his role can be so clear. Go out and for the first handful of overs in the power play, slog, Jake. Just go bang. You know, the undiluted aggression. Bat with impunity. If you get out, you get out. So, and that's sort of harder to do if you put Warner in and you say you dropped Fraser McGurk down to three or four or something like that. So, yeah, they're jostling for the one spot. And it is a good one. I don't blame Australia. How many times, Jared, have we said on the show that experience wins World Cups?
Yeah, you're big on heavy-duty players at World Cups.
Well, we've got 10 million things wrong on the show over the last couple of years. But the one thing we did say was when Marnus Labuschagne was getting all sorts of ways to getting himself in the team in the last World Cup, you just never knew if Australia were 3 for 20 chasing 250 in the final, you wouldn't be too bad seeing Marnus out there. And the same with Warner. If it's a heavy duty, you know, he knows how to win big tournaments. And I think that, you know, they're pretty solid, the first three there. Head, Warner, Captain Marsh at number three. So you and I are in lockstep here, Jared. I'd have played Fraser McGurk, but let's see.
Let's see indeed. So in the announcement, is what got washed over a little bit was Captain Marsh, which we well knew was coming, but it's still a big moment.
One of the great stories in cricket. I mean, what was it? It was only 3 or 4 years ago that he was being tormented beyond belief on social media. He wasn't happy with himself. He was down. You know, he sacrificed millions of dollars for his white ball cricket, for his Australian career. I remember once he turned down the IPL because he wanted to try and play county cricket to improve his red ball cricket. So Mitch Marsh took a long time to find himself as a player, even though he's sort of gone back to what he was at 19, a beautiful player. But he's respected by the team. I'm so glad they gave him the captaincy. I know he's put a lot of thought into it, but I've never seen – you've always liked him, Jared, haven't you?
The Marsh twins.
Yep. You've had – and it's been the quirky part of your persona. You've just loved the Marshes and you've stood firm. It's been quite something to watch because sometimes you can't see me and I'm on the other end going, oh, Jared, God, will you tone it down a bit? but you've always loved him and he's got to where you wanted him to get to, hasn't he?
Yep. And this it's got such potential for him. He's always – I remember when – Kat and I went over for what ended up being the fateful South African tour. And we were chatting at the start of it and Mitch Marsh was back then and still trying to find his way. And Kat said that he could captain Australia. It's just he'll never get the opportunity to because Smith will be the captain for the duration of Marsh's career. And then things went sideways. But here he is as the captain of a World Cup squad for Australia. I know as the squads have been landing, there's the odd player that catches the eye. And Shamar Joseph is in the West Indies squad.
Yes, and has never played an international T20. Shamar, who famously bowled the West Indies to victory against Australia at the Gabba and was picked up by Justin Langer's franchise, Lucknow, in the IPL. Played only one game and been dropped, so he's just going around in the bus with them. But I've got to say this, the West Indies chairman of selectors, Desmond Haynes, the former great opener who was in the era of, you know, holding Roberts, Croft and Garner, faced him in the nets for 12 years. And he knows a fast bowler and he knows what makes him tick. And he's also from Barbados, which is the similar region to what Shamar is. And I think that he's just saying, you know, this is a smart kid who's learning so quickly, you know. He hadn't picked up a pink ball until about a week before the day-night test. So this is a good selection. I like it. And he's also saying is whatever he does in this tournament, he'll learn from. And we want him to be part of the West Indies scene forever. A great young player.
Now, the past couple of days, I've been watching this funny YouTube stream from the Bahamas watching World Athletics Relay Championships where you win a place on the starting blocks for Paris. So this morning, the men's 4x100 metres team has qualified for Paris. The 4x400 teams look like they've both missed. They haven't run one or two in the ripper charges that are happening at the moment. But the headline act was yesterday when the Australian women's 4x100 metres relay team, which hasn't seen action in this event since Sydney, won their way through by in that the first heat of things ran in the first two. This is anchored by Tori Lewis. So the two emerging stars for Australia heading to the track in Paris, Claudia Hollingsworth in the 800 and Tori Lewis in the 200, but she's now going to be the anchor in a relay team that's going to get its go.
Oh, yes, and improving by the minute. A terrific story. A Scottish mother and a West Indian father, born in the United Kingdom, moved out to Newcastle and then came to Queensland to the St. Peter's Lutheran College, where Dean Boxall trains Ariane Titmus and all those great swimmers. And she has just gone through the roof. Really confident kid. And it's been 24 years, not since Sydney, have Australia fielded a 100-metres female relay team in the Games. And, Jared, if there's one thing that bewilders me in Australian sport, and I've never found the answer for this, and I've often asked the question, our athletics, all of our records, so many of them are old time.
Yep.
The fastest 200-metre runner in Australia is Peter Norman at the Mexico Olympics in 1968. I know it's at altitude and all that, but 1968? Robert DiCostello still holds a distance record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Patrick Johnson, 100-metre sprint, that's 20 years old. And I just, you think of the changes in tracks and shoes and everything. I'm thrilled that these two relay teams are in because that's about 10 runners that'll really, you know, with reserves, that'll get international experience. And that's the one thing about our athletes. Ralph Dubell, from 1968, held the 800-metre record until about a couple of years ago.
Yes.
So can you understand it? Can you explain why? I can't.
No, not really, not with the advances in technology and the like. So, no, it's the women, so they're just starting the finals now. So it's a funny sort of meet where they do a whole lot of Olympic qualifying, and then we're just getting to the finals. So there's the mixed 4x400 metres relay finals about it. So I presume the women run in the next hour in the final of the 4x100. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. Crash, always great to touch base on a Monday. Good man.
Thank you, Jared. See you next week.
Go Bolson Bouncers at that press conference. The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock.